Afternoons with Jamie Burnett at 13 minutes past two. And earlier we were having a chat with the Department of Industry about growth rates in different job sectors. One of the things we touched on as well was the threat to some jobs by automation. In other words, robots and computers becoming a little more clever than we are and nicking our jobs. You remember this?
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
Yeah, I've got to admit, that still scares me just a little bit. Well, tech writer and social commentator Stilgarian joins me. G'day.
G'day, Jamie.
Should we be panicked by this?
I think unless you're in a job that requires nuances of understanding humanity or really fine manipulation of the physical world around you, yeah, we're screwed. We're going to be out of a job.
That wasn't the answer I was expecting from you, Still.
Well, what were you expecting?
No, I like that you're honest. I thought you were going to go with the providing hope line, but no, it's just all over. We're
in
strife.
Here's the thing. I mean, the first industrial revolution was all about replacing the kind of mechanical jobs of moving atoms, which was all done by animals, including humans, and replacing them with machines. So instead of, you know, a whole series of blokes loading single bags of wheat at the port, you had one big bulk handling device driven by one person. We've seen that in the mining industry. We don't have 1,000 men with pickaxes. We have one great machine, some mechanics to service it, and even now they're being replaced by robots. So the second industrial revolution, I sometimes call it, is not about atoms, the physical world, it's about bits and bytes of information. And we're getting much more complex ways of handling that can be done by computers. And one of the classic examples I use actually in a lecture I sometimes give is that news stories are already being written by robots. Simple stories in the daily media.
Now, I can see our newsroom through the window there just all turning around, panicked.
And I don't blame them. Actually, the people who are already there are probably okay, but all of the entry-level jobs that were done by cadet journalists straight out of university, they're now in the US starting to be done by computer. And the kind of things I mean are a routine Monday morning report saying how the real estate sales went on the weekend. They're written to a formula. It's, there were 300 properties sold on the weekend and the average price is up 14% on last year. The most expensive house was in thus and such suburb at $2.4 million. All of that is now well within the capability of computers. They've been writing such stories in the United States for around about 4 or 5 years now.
Okay, I find that interesting, but maybe if I'm writing something with maybe a little bit of emotion, a little bit of heart, maybe some humour, I might be safe for a little while.
That's right, and we're seeing that the stories written by robots are very robotic, as it were. Like, they do the job, but they're certainly never going to win a Walkley Award. They're not going to spot the really unusual things. But anything where there's a lot of repetitive work that's a little bit more complicated, things that are already there, robot vision systems are now much better at looking at breast x-rays to spot something that might be cancer than humans. Humans get tired and miss stuff. Robots don't. The same goes for watching security cameras for sudden signs of movement. A lot of low-level legal jobs are going. The paralegal, for example, who would help draft, you know, interview someone and draft the first version of a contract, just filling in the dots for the senior lawyer to sign off on, well, that first grade of stuff is now being automated.
Okay, 17 minutes past two. My guest is tech writer, social commentator Stilgarian. I suppose, though, with part of this adaption, I suppose, there are some advantages that would come from this change.
Oh, yes. And I think one of the most important will be, first of all, there'll be a whole lot of stuff that was really just dreary, mind-numbing work is going to be gone, because that is the stuff that was first to be automated. For us in a rich Western country like Australia, we'll probably be okay, because all of the kind of you know, we'll still be rich enough to be able to hire people to take care of all of that stuff, and we might be okay. We're relatively well educated and so on. But if you're from a country that's relied on a lot of the more routine stuff, and the same happened in the physical world. I mean, you know, we relied on factories in China or wherever to do the assembly of machinery, and now that's increasingly been done by robots. So the same sort of thing. What I'm thinking of here is like a surgeon who's looking at an X-ray and dictating notes into their machine, and that audio file is sent off, not to Australia anymore, most of it's outsourced to the third world, to Mumbai or to Nairobi, and a typist will type that up and send it back. The kind of voice recognition is getting better. So we'll see some stuff outsourced from first world countries like Australia to the third world, and the stuff that the third world was doing will eventually disappear.
You touched on a little bit of it there, but exactly what's the technology? I know it's broad, but what's the technology involved here? Where's it at its best, at its peak?
The one for me that's most interesting, well, there's two. One is vision systems, and the other is language recognition.
Okay.
And we kind of, anyone who's got a smartphone and has played with the kind of language recognition has probably noticed that in the last few years, it's been getting much better, a lot faster. And, you know, the three systems, Apple has Siri, Google has, well, it's just called Google Voice Search and other things. Microsoft has a system called Cortana. And it's a combination of knowledge about the world, I mean, because you can just search for stuff, and increasingly information is available online, knowledge about yourself, your calendar, you know, the contents of your email, your communication, your physical location, because your phone tells you where you are and so on, and really just a slow, gradual improvement in that. So, for example, with Google Voice Search now, you can say, who was Prime Minister of Australia in 2006? And it will say, it was John Howard, and you can then say, how old is he? And it'll remember that you're still talking about John Howard.
Ah, the follow-up question.
The follow-up question.
Journalists really are in trouble.
Oh, yeah. you know, computers perhaps can't receive a brown envelope full of leaked documents just yet.
So and we're not quite at the level of... We're not quite at the level of a Scarlett Johansson in Her, but Siri's definitely getting better.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, people should play with it every now and then. I mean, there is that question of how much of your personal life do you want to give to the system? And, and that's, you know, a decision everyone will have to make for themselves. I personally don't, but then, you know, I lead a very, very simple life and I know how to read a map. But it is very impressive when you see some of these systems at work when they know from your email that you booked a flight to Sydney and it's this afternoon. They know from your location that you're still at a bar in the city, and they know from the maps technology that traffic is very heavy today, and the kind of personal assistant software that we're talking about here can volunteer to pop up a message and say, hey, traffic's heavy, do you want me to call you a cab now?
It's amazing. It's amazing. The next question I want to ask you, I'm a little scared too, because you opened this by saying we're all screwed, quote unquote.
And I did say that, yes.
Stephen Hawking, just last week, I played a bit of the interview just earlier. He said that artificial intelligence posed a real threat to the human race.
Yes.
What do you think, still?
Look, much as Stephen Hawking is one of the smartest people on the planet and a very fine astrophysicist and cosmologist, I don't recall him being a neuroscientist or a computing scientist. So in that field, it's a bit like me talking about cricket. I wouldn't have the faintest idea.
Stick to your strengths, Stephen. Yeah.
Exactly. And look, I think he was just personally surprised because he just went through an upgrade of the voice system he uses to pick out words for, you know, what will come out of his computer voice that had not been updated in 20 years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't hear Stephen Hawking asking for a selfie?
No. Well, he could make, you know, he could add words to it, but the process of working out what he might say next has advanced so much because he has to kind of move his eyes and that detects his eye movement to work out which word he wants to pick to say next. Well, now there is some excellent technology that I use on my smartphone that learns from the language I use to be able to predict what word is going to be next. And here's an example for you. If I know that you've said coming up after, what are the next two words?
The news. Yeah, there you go.
You know, 99% of the time, that's what it'll be. So you can throw that up. And that freaked him out. Stephen Hawking was quite surprised that it could so quickly learn and predict what he was going to say next. I think he's missed one very important point about all this technology, is that us humans can just walk up and pull the PowerPoint.
Exactly right. And you know what I can do as well? When I get closer, I might just say coming up after 3 o'clock or something like that, just to confuse him a little bit. Still, Garen, I feel a little bit better now. Thanks so much for having a chat with us on Afternoons.
Pleasure, Jamie.